So, welcome. I'm going to give some of the introductory stuff, and then as we get in, we have a series of activities we're going to have you do with copies of the essentials. We do have some extra copies up here if anyone didn't get a copy. And then we're also going to, is that going to work in a minute? Yay! We're also going to be watching some videos so you can see some of the essentials in action. Usually that's a lot more powerful than our standing up here and talking about it. So to get us started, just to give you an overview, what we're going to do today is have you engage with the essential practices for early mathematics and explore how you might use them to support assessment practices and in turn the learning and teaching of mathematics. Just like our keynote this morning, we're getting tech support on the fly. I love it. That's good because I'm a Mac user, so we're good now?
Yep.
Yay. Okay. And as I mentioned, we're going to do some interaction with videos so you can see some of the essentials in practice, what they might look like in a teaching and learning environment. And then we're really going to focus in on the role of assessment in these practices. That's backwards, or we have that same slide in there again. Just to give you a sense, the early essential practices for early mathematics were developed by the Early Math Task Force, which was a task force of MAISA's General Ed Leadership Network. Membership included math consultants and early childhood consultants from ISDs, the Michigan Department of Education, various educational organizations. The MAC is represented, MEMSPA, some other state organizations like that. And then we have three universities. We'll talk a few minutes about our lead researchers, but we have researchers from the University of Michigan, Michigan State University, and Grand Valley State University round out the task force. And we have actually were formed a little over 3 years ago, and this was a labor of love that was not a quick product. I was really happy to hear Dr. Pellegrino talking this morning about a theory of action. We did begin with the theory of action, and those of you that are familiar with the essentials for early literacy, this is very, very similar, beginning with the idea that you have to align policies, funding, and resources. Once those are aligned, you're able to develop state, regional, and local leaders in mathematics education, and that will lead to being able to embed sustained, practice-based professional learning with supports so that we're able to develop teachers' understanding of the content, instructional practices, and context so that we are implementing quality practices in early mathematics in every classroom every day so that every child develops a strong mathematics understanding, skills, and dispositions. So if you're familiar with the early literacy theory of action, this is very, very similar. We just tweaked it a bit for mathematics. So our lead researchers on this project have been Dr. Macy Golson out of the University of Michigan and Dr. Amy Noel Parks out of Michigan State University. And so they've really helped guide. This is a research-based document, the same as the Essentials for Early Literacy, and they've really guided and supported us with the research base. You want to say something about this slide, Dana? Oh, and I wasn't using the mic either. My bad.
So this slide is really what it all sums up to be. So children learn by participating in the mathematical work, not by watching adults participate in the mathematical work. So if you ground your thinking there for the rest of the day, and as you're going into classrooms and you're interacting with teachers and interacting with administrators, having this in mind is that we should be paying attention to our kids and what they're engaged in doing.
I forgot we're supposed to be using the microphone, so I will stand here and be good. So this takes us to the essential practices, and I don't know if we want to say anything.
You know, really, it looks, as Kathy said, it looks a lot like the essentials for early literacy. One big difference is that these are designed pre-kindergarten through grade 3 in one document, not as two separate documents. There was a lot of dialogue around that, but decided that it was better to try to build the connections across pre-K 3 and attend to both in one document. It creates an opportunity for us to then customize some of the ways that we interact with different educators when we get into the professional learning aspects. And so really help them think about how does it connect to their environment, whether they're in a center-based practice, a school-based practice, so on and so forth.
And there is one other difference, and this was something we spent a lot of time on. You'll notice that on the very first page, there is a list of the things that we value about early mathematics. And those value statements were some of the first things that we developed as a task force, because that really helped us determine the research paradigm that we were drawing from, because we were drawing from research then that aligned with those values. So we list the values on the front page of the document, and then we go into the essentials, and then later in the document we go through and we articulate those values much more clearly.
And if you click one more time, you'll see that. Yep, there you go.
Okay. And so those were critically important to the work that we were doing as we move forward, and significantly different than what you see in the early literacy essentials.
So we don't think they have different values. We just think included them.
No. It was just really important that we articulate them so that, there's a continuum of research. And we wanted to make sure that we were being very consistent and very transparent about the research paradigm that we were drawing from. And so that was the purpose for all of us to agree on that value statement. I'm going to give you a little bit of just a historical perspective very quickly before we dive more deeply into the document. Really, when the Early Math Task Force was formed in November of 2016, the purpose was to develop a document that provided a framework of evidence-based instructional mathematics instructional practices. It is not a content document, and we'll talk a little bit about that. It is instructional practices. And the goal was really to shift the mindset around mathematics to really redefine what pre-K mathematics looks like and sounds like in the classroom. We were looking to create instructional environments in which children are engaged in mathematics, resulting in long-term learning gains that were tinkering, hands-on, and I can't remember.
Problem-based.
Problem-based was the third piece. That is still covered up. By the way, I see some folks taking pictures of the slides, and these are in the slide deck, in the conference slide deck as well. So, this document is intended to serve as a tool for building shared understanding and expertise among facilitators statewide that are providing professional learning focused on early mathematics, so that it doesn't matter if you're in Iron Mountain in the UP or Detroit Public or Southwest Michigan, all early mathematics teachers are getting the same professional learning around elementary mathematics. So there is consistency statewide. We had a lot of conversation about the importance of making sure that there was consistency statewide.
Or at least grounded in the same research base. So it may be in some ways customized to a context, building from where you are, but that it's grounded in the same guiding documents and research.
And then the tool is really to support and guide pre-K through third grade teachers of mathematics through the professional learning about teaching and learning in that pre-K 3 classroom, as well as to aid in the supportive work of administrators, future mathematics coaches, which is a goal of this work as well.
Okay. So as I just mentioned, we have to think about the context which everybody is in. And so what you're seeing on the left here is an image from Principles to Actions, which is a figure that comes out of our National Council of Teachers of Mathematics. And so this is something that people have been using in professional learning for several years. And what we want to say, and it suggests 8 instructional practices. And what we wanted to say is that please don't think the instructional practices that are in this document pull you away if you have this in your background. It actually enhances it. So it adds to some things that may not be as explicit in this depiction from the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics. But connected to what we were just hearing in Dr. Pellegrino's keynote is that we really do, when we're thinking about assessment, whether it's at inside or outside of the classroom, we have to think about what are our goals to focus the learning. And so as we get into the practice focused on the process of formative assessment within the document, we want to be thinking about what are those goals to focus learning. When we're doing that, we have to think about the task selection, because if the tasks we choose are very kind of naked number kinds of problems, if they don't lend themselves to allowing us to observe what kids are doing, what they're able to tell us about what they know, but also show us, show their competence in a range of ways, then the tests aren't going to help us really get a sense of what it is they do understand, so that we can really build from those initial understandings. And that's the kind of a central point, is how do we identify what kids understand and build from it? Not assume we have holes to fill, but see what they have and build from it. So it's a bit of a distinction. And then these pieces down here really relate to the process of formative assessment. We should have discourse going on, which means there have to be purposeful questions. They have to be able to use and connect mathematical representations. We have to prompt and use questioning to elicit student evidence of student thinking and support kids with the perseverance piece. So not to give up just after they see a problem and don't have an entry point, but help them really make sense of where it might be an entry point for me. I have a way to enter this problem, and I can adjust along the way. So again, just a reminder that this has been a framework that has been in use in many of our classrooms and in professional learning across the state. And so the next step into these practices really works to further articulate pieces of this and enhance upon what's already there. So here are the practices. You have copies of them. If anyone still needs one, we do have a few more copies up here of the practices. But this is just an overview of the eight. We are going to be focusing in on number four today, given it's the assessment conference. So Kathy mentioned these are not content specific. They are in the frame of instruction. And that was intentional. The standards for kids for mathematics really do, you know, spell out the content across kindergarten, across first grade, across second grade, across third grade. And so we didn't want to use this document to replicate what's in there. And when you get into some of the aspects that you'll see in number four, the process of formative assessment here, it's going to take more than a document to articulate the learning progressions and trajectories that are referenced in there. So it wasn't really possible to put those in this kind of a document. And so we stayed in the space of instruction. Okay, so the stop. One of the things to remember is that the stop is not about stopping talking for kids. It's stopping talking of the teacher. Okay, we're trying to make space for kids to participate. The look is observation. We learn a lot from watching kids. I was just in the Dr. Tanya Wright's session yesterday. She spoke to observation and how much you learn by watching kids read, how much you learn by watching their interactions with books. It's very much the same in mathematics. We need to have kids engage with mathematics so that we can watch and observe how they're writing on their page, how they're moving manipulatives around, how they're making connections between what they're writing to those manipulatives and how they're talking to one another about the mathematics. So observation is very critical. And then the listen is, of course, then listening to what they're saying. Okay. So this in particular is the process around that really focuses on the process of formative assessment. And so today we're going to delve more deeply into the bullets within this practice. So, you have these, again, they're in practice four of your document. And I'll just take a moment and kind of, I think I'll speak to each of them. So, in this first one, this comes back to the tasks. If the opportunities, if the tasks that we present, if the activities we present don't enable us to notice children's informal ways to speak about, represent, and do mathematics, we can't really observe that. So, we've got to think about the tasks. This next one, recognize different ways individual children demonstrate their competence. Sometimes kids, before they have the language of some of the language of mathematics, are going to be pointing to things and moving to things. And even if they have some of the mathematical language, we may be pointing or moving or saying it goes like this, or it's higher, it's lower. Those might be things that we're seeing. It's bigger, it's smaller. So we may have the need to pay attention to gestures in a lot of ways. And that's not just relevant for pre-K 3. That's all the way through in mathematics. for this one, posing purposeful questions. Our questions need to be natural and built out of what kids are saying, but they also need to be guided by those goals. So you remember in the Principles to Actions diagram, the first thing I showed you was attention to the mathematical goals. So our questions need to be geared towards those, but building off what we're hearing and observing from kids. And then supporting children in reflecting and communicating. So asking them, what is it that makes sense to them now? What do they understand differently than they did before they started this task? Can you explain what the person next to you was saying? What might you add on to that? And so supporting that communication and that reflection. So obviously it's not stopping the kids from talking again, because when I looked at the title, I was like, oh, it sounds like we're stopping kids from talking. That is not what we mean at all. I mentioned, I referenced this earlier, we really want to build from kids' understandings to provide that timely, productive feedback. It's not good, it's not bad, it's not percentages. It's, I noticed you put this, you use the base 10 blocks in this way. Can you tell me some more about how you use those base 10 blocks? Why did you choose to use that versus your bundles and sticks for this problem? Okay, so bundles and sticks we might use with place value, base 10 blocks we might use with place value. So why are you choosing one over the other? Why did you make that decision? Okay. Work with children's identified strengths as a starting point. We have to know what we're looking for and be able to identify those. So that's a piece of our professional learning. And I referenced the progressions and the trajectories. We have several models, like Dr. Pellegrino mentioned in the last talk, that are grounded in the evidence. They're listed as learning trajectories, progressions, and models in mathematics. We have some that are accessible and free, tied to the national work around the Common Core State Standards that lay out progressions. We also have some, Dr. Doug Clements, Judy Sarama have worked on a lot of these research-based progressions. The DREAM Network, DREME, they've worked with that, which is a early childhood mathematics education network, which I think some of our videos are from today. It's a great resource they just have a plethora of different resources tied to early mathematics on that DREAM website. And then some of you may be engaged in math recovery, and within math recovery there are models and progressions that are articulated that all help us. So whatever models and progressions you're choosing, they're all grounded really in the same research base. But it's which one in your context are you using, but use one. Pick one, or to have one that you can reference as a set of progressions. And then finally, to ensure the classroom level assessment practices disrupt historical patterns of marginalization with respect to race, gender, ability, socioeconomic status, and language. All too often our assessment practices, Stephen, all too often our assessment practices undermine equity within the classroom. And we sometimes think students are not able to interact with the mathematics in powerful ways because of biases we bring, because of ways that they're able to show their competence. And so we have to really think about our assessment practices so that we don't actually perpetuate those historical patterns of marginalization and actually work to disrupt those. And so this has been a bullet that within the practices that has actually drawn a lot of attention as we've had some introductory sessions at like Michigan Council of Teachers of Mathematics, where the teachers in the room have said, you know, this is something that keeps coming up and I don't feel like I have a way to know how to work on this. And so they're like, I'm glad it's there, and now we're going to be prompted to really talk about this in our schools and in our classrooms. And so that's exciting that's the bullet that people are, and there's versions of this bullet in the other practices because these are interconnected. And I think that's exciting that people are in a space ready to address and disrupt those historical patterns of marginalization. And learn to recognize, because that's the first step, is to learn to recognize where they might exist. So what we're going to do for our task today So we're going to get you into these, we're going to stop talking, and we're going to get you into doing some thinking and some work. So we would like you to choose, whoops, where are you going?
I went back so you can see the bullets again.
Okay. We would like you to choose a bullet, and so they're all listed in the slides that we have up here, but you have them in, again, in practice four. So you're choosing a bullet within practice four that you want to think about. And your task, and we would hope that you would turn and talk to someone close to you to think about this, but you may work individually if you choose to do that, is to think about, given my current conception of what this might mean, what might it look like and sound like if I'm seeing a lesson that's representative of this? Or if I'm seeing a lesson that's non-representative of the intent? This isn't a test. Just think about how I'm interpreting this bullet. You can pick any of the eight within formative assessment. So pick the one you like the best, the one that stands out to you, the one you relate to the most. And just think about what might it look like in a representative lesson that's supporting the intent of this bullet, and what might it look like in a non-representative lesson.
We have a slide like this for each of the eight bullets. So after 5 minutes or so, we're going to have you kind of share so that hopefully we can, for each bullet, have some examples and non-examples.
Okay. All right. If you could find a stopping point in your conversations, please. We want to get just a few thoughts from you. We're not going to go through and have everybody list everything they said about, you know, each of these different bullet points. But we would like to get a few thoughts, because what we're going to do next is we're going to look at video of classrooms. And from the video in the classrooms, we want you to watch that video with the frame of what you were just talking about in mind, and see how watching it and possibly watching this bullet in action, and you might not see it in action, the one you chose, but how watching this instruction adds to your current understanding of these practices. Okay, so we just want to record a few ideas. So would one of you, it was really hard to hear given the noise when I tried to listen to the different conversations that were going on, so would one of you be willing to get us started off? Tell us which bullet you are referencing, and then we'll just kind of keep a running record of some of the thoughts.
We did bullet D.
So we'll go to that one. D.
D. See, I can't hear even when nobody's talking.
A representative would allow time for kids to solve because they are the ones who are talking. And when students are struggling, there's an opportunity for the teacher to mediate their thinking through the struggle, through questioning, and summarizing what they're saying, paraphrasing, and allowing them to collaborate with their peers. Students would have choice of strategies and materials, and although they won't come knowing how to necessarily reflect on their own thinking and the thinking of their classmates, that's something that might need to be taught to them. A non-representative lesson is when the teacher is doing most of the talking, especially if he or she is saying, no, this is how you do it. And the students are just given a pack of worksheets to complete using the standard algorithm.
But another representative, can I see a hand? You want to add?
I think also in a representative lesson, there's application, and then there are students discussing their thoughts as they work through whatever they're applying, whatever skill they're applying to whatever activity they have.
So we did B.
Yeah. I got that one. Thank you, Dana.
So in a representative lesson, you would see students interacting with the mathematics in various ways. So they could be using manipulatives. They could be drawing talking, making gestures like it says up there. The teacher would be using a variety of formative assessment techniques, which could include observation, note-taking, interviewing, etc. And then in the non-representative lesson, it would be lecture-based. Students would be either sitting at desks or tables or possibly on the carpet, but just listening and not really interacting with the mathematics that's happening in the classroom.
Let's get one more out there. So can we get one more group to share?
Letter C, purposeful questions. We will hear things like, how would you solve this problem? What did you notice? How is this connected to whatever previous concepts we talked about? How is it different? We will see turn and talks. And for maybe the first, second, and third graders, maybe some quick writes or some math journaling.
So now you're seeing my typing skills.
They're better than mine. All right, so first of all, I just have to say this is a beautiful example of an asset-based approach because we didn't fill these slides in for you. You all had a place to enter into this, a place to get started in your conversation, and we have a place to build from now. So thank you for engaging in that.
When you guys first started, you connected literacy essentials, and then you said you just tweaked it a little bit to go to mathematics. But I think there is a big piece of literacy within mathematics, because I think what students struggle with the most is that I read the problem, I just don't know. All they see, the numbers, and then they say, oh, addition. Oh, no, it's subtraction. And then they start putting all these operations together, and then they can't make sense of the paragraph that they're reading for problem solving. So it's really very interconnected between mathematics, the logic that comes from the mathematics, and the literacy skills that we get to learn from the literacy, and then to be able to solve those mathematics skills and logics that come behind it, to be able to turn that problem into numbers and equation to be able to solve it. So that's a very big piece that I think we need to keep.
Yeah, thank you for adding that. And that's actually one of the things I've been grappling with is where are there connections that are connections between mathematics and literacy that we can really build upon, and where are there some differences that we actually have to say there's a difference in mathematics and ELA or literacy in this way. And so it's just something that I'm struggling with myself and trying to think harder about. But as we service, again, the same group of teachers, pre-K 3 teachers, and we're working in both spaces, whatever connections we make that are productive and can help move both content areas forward is really critical, because adding more and adding more is not going to get us where we need to be. Okay. All right. So
we're going to have to drive from back here now.
Yeah. All right. So that's just a reminder of the STEM. So we call those opening pieces STEMs, and then the bullets beneath them. So that was the STEM of the practice that we're in. And here's our first video. You don't need to think about every single one of these questions. You can pick your favorite question. But this is a video from a pre-K classroom. This is one from the DREAM website that I referenced. And so you can think about the ideas. They're going to be the same set of questions for each of the slides. So you may choose to think about the mathematical ideas. You may choose to think about the way children were given space to participate. Or you may choose to tie it to the practice or the bullet you just explored within that practice number 4. So.
Samantha, what happened to your apples? How many apples do you have in here?
One.
One, two. How many are you going to eat?
One.
What's going to happen if she eats one? Look, she has two. What's going to happen if she eats one? What if one goes away?
Mine.
Yeah, that one's yours. You want to get it? And then how many are in the package now?
Una.
Una, ¿verdad, David? Quedó una. Oh, no. How many are in the package now?
Zero.
Zero. And zero means? What does zero mean?
Nothing.
All right, we're going to show two additional videos from early childhood classrooms. But we definitely heard the language piece that we were just talking about come up in there, right?
All right. Can you count yours again for me?
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven.
If you can, you give me two.
No, I see. No, I count them.
Okay. How many do you have left?
One, two, three, four, five.
So how many keys do you have?
Five.
If I give you one more, how many do you have?
12.
Aiden. Which of your group has the most?
I'm not the teacher. I'm the teacher.
The purple, how do you know, has more?
Okay. So, you just watched three clips. Talk about what you saw in those three clips related to either those three questions or tying back to the practice that you were just looking at.
Go ahead.
Why don't we pull
up three questions again, just as a reminder? Okay. Score. Okay. Okay. So I'm hearing the lull. So, what is something that came up in the three clips you just saw that adds to what you were already thinking about this practice or noticing assessment?
That the kids are actually doing the math.
Yeah. Yep, they're definitely doing it. What else?
They're able to interact with it in different ways. I think it was like the second or third where there was the group of students all at the same table, but they all had different problems that they were working on with different manipulatives. So they're able to interact with it in a variety of different ways.
Okay. One more.
I'd also say like the added benefit of the manipulatives is that it makes the dependence upon whatever the dominant instructional language is like less of a factor. I can still think and process in my native language in my head using what's physically in front of me. And apples are tasty too.
You know, the first practice in, so we're in four, but the first practice is to design in learning environments around play and tinkering, okay? Essentially, they're not all structured lessons. This is snack time, right? But we're having a mathematical conversation focused around mathematical goals. There's observation. It's not dependent on kids having to sit independently and write anything. It's just a natural flow to the day. And this is this can be assessment. If we added to this, the teacher just having in the background or after this conversation, a little clipboard that just said this happened today, to take that note. Just like we, again, another practice from literacy of using the grids to be able to jot down what happened so that we can start to record that over time and show how kids' thinking in mathematics have grown over time. Okay. Now we're going to go to a little bit older children. We're into kindergarten now. Big jump. All right. So all of these questions can be in your head, but we'll come back to how does this add to your understanding of practice four? I need my notes on starting times.
So, mathematicians, last time we had math workshop, you were working on decomposing the number 10. Can you give me a me too if you remember that? You found so many different ways to decompose the number 10. You found so many different ways to decompose.
And then you need one, like, in the middle space, and then you need four again on the other side.
Hmm.
You need to write your name.
I do need to write my name, right? So can you repeat your idea one more time, please?
You need four on the other side and one heart in the middle and four on the other side.
Okay. So I'm hearing Derek say that I need four hearts and one heart and four hearts. Is that what you're saying, Derek?
Yes.
Yes? Okay, let's go ahead and see if that would make 10 together. Ready? So I'm going to build it the way you said. Four hearts and one heart and four.
Are you ready?
Is that what you were saying?
Yes.
Okay, can you please go back to your spot? I'm going to ask you a question in 1 second. We're going to count these and make sure and see if we've made 10. You ready to help Mr. Torney count?
Yeah.
Israel, are you ready to help Mr. Torney count? Let's do it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10, 1, 10, 2, 10, 3, 10, 4, 10, 5, 10, 6, 10, 7, 10, 8. Derek, do I have 10 on my paper?
Yep.
I do?
Yep, you got 10, 8.
I have 10, 8. Is that the same as the number 10?
No.
No? How do you know?
Because 10 is 1 and a 0, and 10, 8 is 1 and 8.
Are they the same number?
No.
No. Which is more?
10, 8.
Okay, so wait a second. So I'm not sure that we've built 10 on the paper yet. Will you call in a friend with a quiet hand at their heart who can add to your idea? So first off, do you... opposites?
Yeah.
I wonder if there's something that's opposite or something that's similar about those two.
This is 10.
Is it?
Yes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Okay, I'm remembering back to the mini lesson though. Do you remember what somebody did? I'm hearing Danielle say it's 11.
How? If it's all together, it's 11.
But I accidentally made that wrong because I was supposed to do this and that.
Can you help us double check?
No, you didn't X out that one.
Let's find out. I'm hearing Danielle say that together makes 11. Let's count to find out. Okay, hold up.
It's not 11.
Well, we're mathematicians. We're going to count, and we're going to find out, and we're going to talk about our idea. Hey, Derek. Hold up. You got this. Do you want to count and find out?
No, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
Oh my gosh, what did you notice? What did you learn?
11.
Oh, how can we take it to 10? Why is that one gonna, why is Xing that one out gonna make 10?
I need to X it out.
You need to X it out, but why is that going to turn it into 10?
Because I need to turn it into 10 because that's how the fours goes. That's your three.
Oh, how do you feel about that?
All right. You know the routine now, so go ahead, turn and talk amongst yourselves, please.
Yeah, primarily.
Yeah.
We're made the first district, and then we're hoping to then get the future.
Okay, let's come back together. And I'm going to ask again for three groups to share out. Okay, so where do I have one? Anywhere? One? To get us started? All right.
You're done for the day. I'm done, yeah. Thank you.
He's my supervisor, by the way.
Dana has to cut me off. So I loved one aspect I saw that I'm latching onto. He's tried to help build identity in the young man as a mathematician. So I heard him say, this is what mathematicians do. And I think he even said, we are mathematicians. So we don't just write the answer. We're going to think and discuss it. So it's like the thinking and the processing and really experimenting. It's not about writing the right answer on the paper. It's about tinkering and experimenting with what works, and we're mathematicians. And so he paused when he said that. He kind of sat back a little, like, okay. And so I love that sort of proselytizing of this is what mathematicians do, and I would hope that, you know, the student in hearing that and experiencing that will begin to have that identity as a mathematician. So I'm an old high school teacher. And so by the time the kids get to high school, they don't think of themselves as a mathematician or someone who's good at math. It's just about getting the answer. So I love that language.
So in an effort to do a little foreshadowing, that connects very well to practice two, which is not our focus today, but it's establish and monitor norms, ways of being in the classroom that promotes positive, robust mathematical identities. And that's what Stephen was just describing there, is building of that mathematical identity.
I thought his questioning was quite powerful, even after the student, you know, came to that discovery of like, oh, it's this one, it's 11, he still pushed. And so why, when you cross it out, does it make 10? Like he was really specific in his questioning.
There was even a place in there where we saw a little, remember the one that said to prompt students to like reflect on their thinking, where he said something like, How does that work? And then how does that make you feel? There were a series of little questions right in there, that space, that was part of that kind of metacognition about what he had just done. Okay, one more from this video.
We really liked the language back in the first part of the clip where the student said 10-8. So recognizing that we get to 18 by building 8 more onto 10, so having that early understanding of place value.
Yeah, and so one of the things that have come up in our conversations as a task force is just around the fact that, again, this document is to serve the same teachers, the educators that have been interacting with the literacy practices. And with that, well, it's the same audience. It's very likely that in some ways they have a different relation. Everybody, every one of us has a different relationship with the content of literacy compared to the content of mathematics. And sometimes that relationship is stronger and more robust, and sometimes it's not as robust. And so recognizing that also is that in the professional learning, there are opportunities to work on the identities as well as the content knowledge of the educators that are participating with us, because we know that's one of the things that we'll be addressing as we work together and, you know, dig in side by side and move forward. There was one more thing I was going to say, but I think I lost it. It was tied to the content piece. So while we don't name specific content domains in any of these practices, in the introduction, we reference spatial reasoning and number as the focus for early mathematics, because that's what comes out of the National Research Council. That is what comes out of the National Association of Education of Young Children joint report with NCTM. And so we're grounding it in those two areas as focus areas of content. And when we think about the videos we're selecting, we're thinking about videos that focus on number and spatial reasoning. It doesn't mean other domains of mathematics don't get blended in and or that they're not important. That is not the message. But when we think about focusing the learning, those are the two domains we're going to emphasize.
Mm-hmm.
so I heard someone say, oh, a number talk. Mental math pieces, that that's another practice in there. I don't know the number, whatever number it is. But so this is a it's six. Engage children regularly in brief 5 to 10 minute interactive number sense routines focused on developing mental strategies for seeing quantity and working flexibly with numbers. So again, we're focused in four, but look at all these connections to the other practices as we're doing that.
Well, you know what? We're going to do math now.
Yes!
But in math, is it the popular
answer?
We
had to test it.
No, it's the one that we can
test.
Test and prove, exactly. So yes. Who wants to... I want you to look for a strategy that feels good, that you think you might want to try, okay? So listen to other people, how they solved it, and see if one of them makes sense to you, okay? What was your answer?
50.
Can you tell us how you got 50?
I put the one, two, stick, and the three, six together, and that made 40, and then I put the 8 and the 2 together, and...
So they have 38 plus 12. Okay, so she got 50. So she's describing that.
8 plus 2 equals 10, and then I got 50.
And you got 50. Naya, you said that inside of here was a 10 stick, and inside of here was 3 10 sticks. Did everybody see why she says that?
No.
So this one, Josie says that this one is a 10 stick, and that this three is 3 10 sticks. Can I get an agree or a disagree? That's something that you did too? Okay. And then she counted it. Janaya, tell me how you counted this. You put these together?
Yeah.
And what'd you get?
40, and I put the 8 and the 2 together.
Okay. You guys, can we just count this and verify? Count with me. 20, 30, 40. So inside here was a 10 and an 8 and 3 tens and a 2. Soraya, is that making sense to you? You put this 8 and this 2 together and that made 10. So what was 40 plus 10, Janaya? Did anybody, first of all, was there any Me Toos? Did anybody else think of this as tens and ones? Can you turn so everybody can hear you?
First I put the 2 with the 18.
Krishna.
Then I counted 30 more in my hands. Then I got 49 and plus 1 more is 50. So I got 50.
He said, I put the 2 with the 18. Where did the 2 come from?
From the 32.
So inside here is a 2 and a 30. And you put these together to make 20.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's 18 plus 2?
Oh, 20.
Okay. And then you still had 20, 30, 40. 50.
So,
so yeah, we have this idea that if this one is missing some, we can move them over to make it an easier problem. 20 plus 30 feels a lot easier than 18 plus 32, right? Anybody else do it Anthony's way? I see a forward. Oh, you want to change your answer to 50? Whose way convinced you? Janaya's way or Anthony's way?
Janaya's way.
Interesting. Good job, Janaya. That was a very convincing argument.
So it didn't land, which is good job, but it was a convincing argument. So creating convincing arguments are important.
I think what
we
should do, that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, I know.
And then it's to re-engage.
All right, we're going to go ahead and come back together. This one we're not going to debrief. I heard a lot of your conversations. You're in the space. You guys are great. You're coming up with all sorts of ideas tied to before, and then also mentioning connections to a lot of other bullets that you might not have even noticed yet in some of those other practices. So, one of the things that we don't necessarily work on enough is supporting kids in learning how to talk like this in the classroom. And so this is one video, one way of supporting some of this talk to get started. So this is going to be, feel a little bit different, this clip, than the ones that we've been watching so far. But it is the same classroom, same teacher. Oh, where did it go?
Here's some things that I should be hearing. I want you to share, do math, and be independent. So what are some things that you're saying when you share?
Sharing is kind of like taking turns and also...
So what do you say when you're taking turns? What's something that should come out of your mouth? Should you say, give me that?
No!
What should you say?
Please, can I have
that? Please. May I?
Tell us a full
you're
story.
Welcome. You're welcome.
Or say thank you.
Yeah, say thank you when you're done.
Thank you.
Here you go.
And Trinity said, say you're welcome. Can I borrow?
Can I borrow?
Sometimes you want something, Malachi, and someone's using it. And so you might have to wait your turn. And that sounds like this. I want to do that next.
Can you count it again?
Can you count it again? When someone tells you and you're not sure, say, can you count that?
Whoa.
Could you help me get started?
Can I help you?
Can I help you? Good. How do we know if an answer is right, Diva? So why would you ask him to count it again? So we can make sure that the answer is right. Right, because when someone has an idea, we're going to test it. So let's test that. So the last one is be independent. Why do you have to be independent during this time? Why can't you just run up to teacher and ask her a question? I can't come answer your question if you raise your hand. So what are some other things you can do to be independent? Kalea?
You could go to another person and say, what's your question?
Yeah, so ask someone in your group. What else could you do, Mark? Work the whole time. Get started right away and work the whole time. You ask someone in your group and they don't know. Who else could you ask? You can ask someone in another group, and if you're really stuck, you can always just switch activities for now. Okay, I want to add one more thing to do math. It's, does this make sense? Always be asking yourself, does this make sense? These are the things I'm going to be looking for when I'm working with my little group.
All right. So again, this is one way of supporting kids and learning how to interact with one another. And this would be revisited. This doesn't happen once and then it's done. This is an anchor chart in our classroom. We come back to it. This is, we monitor how are we doing. We come back to them and say, so what things did we do really well on this list today? And where could we work harder next time as a class, as a team, as a classroom together? And we build that up over time, which you can see many of the teachers in these videos have been working in these ways, not necessarily just in this one manner, but to build that up in their children over time. Okay. This is the last video we're going to look at today. This is back to a content one. We wanted to pick clips so that you could see a range of ages, but related to the pre-K 3.
And how are you counting them? You got to 100, you switched over to ones. But you agree with Diva that you should keep counting them like tens? And you think she counted them correctly? Get a whiteboard.
Okay, I agree with Diva too.
You like the way she counted also? What were you doing before?
I when it's up to 100, accidentally counted by
what's your answer?
But you think you should keep counting by tens instead? Diva, you've been very convincing today and very helpful. Can you guys go get whiteboards?
Sure.
So I don't know if you heard this little guy in the back here. He just turned and he said, what's your answer? And he had this puzzled look on his face. So kind of follow, we're going to follow him.
But what, babe?
I got 5 points.
Show me.
Who's that?
Sit down here. I'm waiting for Diva to make her number. Janaya, we'll get a whiteboard. It's good, Linaya.
I got 800 and then...
800? Count it.
I mean 80.
And then 83? Where's your 83? I see it. Okay, and then 60... 67? Okay, so is this a put-together or a take-apart problem?
Put-together.
So show me.
Because I'll like... 8, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100, 200, 300, 400, 500, 200.
You know how some kids were counting it?
500.
They were counting it like this, watch. 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80. 90, 100, 101, 102, 103, 104. Is that right? Why?
Because those are not ones.
What are they?
They are 10 sticks.
Okay, so this is how you're counting it. 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100. 200, 300, 400, 500. How are you counting it?
By 10.
Okay, so go back and count it by tens and see what happens.
Okay. 10, 10.
All right, now it's your time to talk, thinking about the video that we just saw.
This was a great session.
We're not going to get to this part, but we've made some of those connections.
They're having such good conversation on the videos. That was worth the time spent on the videos.
And we were able to draw it out without...
I've got to remember to log out because I've logged into my email and Google Drive on there. I've got to be sure to log out. And log out.
Hi. Are you? What did you notice in the last video?
She probably felt like he could figure this out. She had enough experience with him that he could figure this out. And she referenced an error that, and I don't know if you can hear, but she was referencing how they had heard other kids count before. A different error, but a related error, right? And now I have faith in you to listen to how you were counting and figure it out. So
she didn't tell him.
Will you guys be my first group to share out? Do you mind? Okay, thank you. I got to get them back together. But all right, if we could find another stopping point, please. We'll just have one share out this time, and I prompted a little bit to get this group to share their thinking, but they're willing.
So we liked how she showed a different error by counting the tens as ones just to get him thinking that it could be done incorrectly, and then had him or modeled for him again how he had counted, and he all of a sudden figured out it wasn't right. So, yeah.
So we had a reflection there. We had using an error from another that had happened previously in the classroom, the belief that I can I trust that you can figure out this error when you have a little bit of support. And so, yeah, that's, and all of that was assessment through observation and listening. Okay. So what we had planned to do was have you to look for other connections, but we've kind of done that throughout the session. So just keep in mind, there's a lot of interconnections among these practices, even though they're listed as 8 separate practices. We'll skip that. But some of you have asked, what's our plans moving forward? The document's available. We're in the phase of various awareness level conference presentations like the one here. This is the most content-y one that we've done. They've really been more at the space of, like, what is the document? How might you start to use it? That kind of thing. So this one's been the most fun, quite honestly. And then in one of the things we're hoping to do with a 2-day thing for those likely to be provide professional learning, because we don't have funding yet around this project like early literacy does. We're hoping for it, but we don't yet, is to start by having a 2-day series where it's going to have one May or June date and then one August date for those likely to be providing professional learning kind of in their areas and their regions. And so listen for that coming out. It'll probably be communicated first through ECAN and GELN, my guesses would be. I don't know. We'll see. But at kind of a regional level. And then,
and I would just add, ECAN, if you're not familiar with it, is the ISD Early Childhood Network. And then GELN is the General Ed Directors Network at ISDs.
Okay. And then in terms of supports, we're starting some supports that are like some curated kinds of resources. But what we're able to do is going to be somewhat dependent on funding as we move forward. So stand up for us if you want more of this. Okay? All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.